Coming up on Tech News Today, Foxconn workers not happy about reduced hours. Google's ingenious plan to sell tablets. Talk about whether it's ingenious or not. And MasterCard and Visa hacked all to pieces. All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, March 30th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6, introducing the most powerful version yet of the only professional graphics suite made exclusively for Windows. For a free trial plus an exclusive limited-time offer, go to Corel.com/TNT, promo code TWITX6. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we're all four back together.
Yeah.
Yay.
Feels good.
But then, of course, on Friday, we normally have Darren Kitchen, who's off at a workshop today, so we're missing him.
Why can't we all just get along?
Why can't we all sit
the
down
same time.
For a family dinner of
tech
news?
Yeah, no kidding.
Anymore.
We should serve more pie. I think we'll get more people.
This tech news is delicious, by the way.
I'm having a delicious tech news right now myself. Let's start off with some pie of tech news, Apple story
thing.
Pie thing.
See what you did there.
You had a slice of that?
I almost did something.
Not sure what it was.
Follow up to the story yesterday that the Fair Labor Administration had released their report on Foxconn.
Yeah, so Foxconn is planning to cut overtime hours for its over 100 million mainland Chinese workers to 49 hours of overtime per week. And that is worrying some of their workers. In fact, Reuters got a couple quotes from workers at a Foxconn plant in Longhua, which is in southern China. One worker said, hey, we're worried that we'll have less money to spend. Of course, if we work less overtime, it will mean less money. Now, Foxconn has already said, listen, just because we're cutting back overtime hours doesn't mean that everyone just gets less money. We will boost the wages to compensate. So you're pretty much taking the same amount of money home at the end of the month. Workers don't buy that. Another worker said, hey, we're here to work, not to play. Our income is very important. She says she's been told that she can work a maximum of 36 hours per month overtime. And she says, we're unhappy with this. It's not just me. We think that 60 hours of overtime a month would be reasonable. 36 hours is not enough for them. And then she mentions she earns just over the equivalent of $634 per month. Now, of course, workers are doing different things with that money, but many of them come from poor farm areas, are sending money home. I mean, the amount that they are making, it's not because they love their jobs necessarily so much. It's because I got to make $634.
Yeah.
I don't want to make any
that
less
money.
Than that.
Yeah.
And the overtime is the way that I can be guaranteed to do that. So it's a little bit of, is Foxconn really going to make good on this? Fair Labor Association, I wanted to say, I see FLN, I want to say Florida. Fair Labor Association, very different thing. They had audit results that showed employees were working hours that were not allowed under FLA code standard.
And not even under Chinese law, as we mentioned
that
yesterday.
That too, yeah. And employees working more than 7 days a row, that's a violation. So these are all, in theory, good practices to change because you don't want people to be working themselves to death. But then again, Scott Nova, who's an executive director over at Workers' Rights Consortium, it's a labor rights group, told CNET that Apple had its own private auditor who has now confirmed Foxconn never corrected violations in areas like excessive overtime that were first exposed 6 years ago. Now, of course, there's a lot more interest and attention on Foxconn and how exactly
sure.
they're doing things, especially with pressure from Apple.
And Tim Cook was just there, so that's
Tim Cook was just
pressure.
There. But it does sound like their track record is really spotty for making claims and then following through on them. Then again, the Fair Labor Association decided to survey some Foxconn workers themselves and found 48% of Foxconn's employees found their workloads reasonable. Over one-third of respondents said that they'd like to work more hours to make more money. 17.7% of the workers were interested in working less. So overwhelming majority, they don't want their hours cut because they think that that is the only way that they're going to keep those wages up. Of course, if Foxconn is being honest about raising the compensation in order to balance things out, it could be a good deal. But the more we hear about life at Foxconn plants, the more it doesn't sound like people are looking for a lot of like time off, because it's not a very interesting place to be.
Exactly. It's very easy in a developed country to sit there and go, oh, that's horrible to be working that many hours. You need to stop that now.
Right.
And it's different to be someone whose choices are, I can starve, or I can work 60 hours a week. I'm going to choose to work 60 hours a week.
Right.
It's the conditions are complex. You have to take in the entire conditions. You can't. It's not a simple thing to say, well, let's just move the plant, or let's just pay them more, or let's just cut their hours. Every one of those decisions has ramifications across the entire spectrum. So, like you say, if Foxconn follows through and says, we will make sure they still get paid the same amount of work less, that is the ideal situation, right?
Yes.
Because Pete Delahanty pointed out in the chat room, there have been plenty of studies showing that the longer you work, the less productive you are. And over 40 hours a week, your productivity starts to fall up pretty steeply. So Foxconn may find that they actually get more productivity out of a workforce that doesn't work as often. But you don't want people to have their wages cut. You don't want people who are willing, like, look, I'll put in 80 hours a week if it means I get enough money to feed my family back in the village, right?
Yeah.
But you don't. It would be nice if they didn't have to do that. If you could say, look, you can have a more humane schedule, possibly a more productive schedule, and still feed the family back in the village. That's what you're after. But it's not a simple solution. That's why a lot of these knee-jerk reactions and headline-grabbing arguments need to be taken with a grain of salt. It's a much more nuanced problem.
Could these workers be compelled to say they want to work these hours because they know that there's thousands and thousands of people who want their jobs? The fact is, Foxconn is going to hire thousands of people. That means there's a huge pool for employment here. So these people don't want to lose their jobs and say anything bad about the company right now, especially when they're going to go on a hiring binge. So I mean, I'm sure that there are people out there that just want to work. That's something. But I'm just kind of curious about if some people just felt like, look, I'm being surveyed. I don't know who's watching. I'm just going to say, I love working 80 hours a day but a week.
That'd well, they be are impressive. Coming out and saying, we don't agree with what Foxconn is proposing here, and that's the company who's paying us. And, you know, that can seem as like a dissenting opinion. It's also thought, at least by some workers that the Reuters reporters talked to, that Foxconn is like the cleanest, the safest, the most stuff to do in our off time of a lot of the factories that these millions of people are working in from all over China. So as much as Foxconn seems like you can hear the details of life there, which is very insular, in fact, you know, it's almost like a big city, and think, oh, gosh, it sounds awful. But it sounds like workers would rather be at Foxconn than a lot of other choices.
Anonymous Coward in our chat room says, the only thing is they don't want to pay them a fair wage because then the iPad would be more expensive. That is not the case. That is what we're saying is the workers want to make enough money to feed themselves and the folks back in the village. And if the hours get cut, they won't make that. Foxconn is saying we'll increase their pay so that they can work fewer hours and still make the same money. If that's the case, then they're addressing exactly what you're saying. It has nothing to do with the price of the iPad. It has to do with whether people get paid a fair wage or not. And the question is, will Foxconn follow through on that? Prices are going to go up in this situation, but they're not going to go up that much. And in fact, Apple will probably keep price pressure down, which will force everyone else to have to either keep their prices down or raise their prices as well, because this is going to raise prices across the industry. It's not about that. I mean, it's about whether people are going to get treated fairly, get treated humanely, and make enough money to feed themselves and their family. A few of the people in the chat room also say, you know, bring the jobs here, right? And that's a logical reaction. Like, you know, we need jobs in the United States. We're sitting here with 9%, 10% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take the jobs, but will you work for $2.64 an hour? First of all, that's below minimum wage, so it's illegal.
Well,
but
below
that
it.
Is essentially what the equivalent of $634 a month at 60 hours a week is. So I'm not sure that people in the United States would take those jobs at that little. Maybe they would. Yeah, it's easy to sit there and say, well, I would, until you have to do it. But again, it's a much more complex argument than just simply saying, you know, one sentence we'll deal with. Let's move on to something that's much simpler.
Here, Merritt, here,
RIM.
Here.
We mentioned yesterday in the news, Thorsten Hines, the CEO, announced a rather disappointing quarter for RIM, put it mildly. We have some more information about what he told analysts in their analyst call that was going on right when we started the show. He told analysts yesterday that RIM is going to focus on its mobile fusion product, device management tools that control RIM's BlackBerry phones, as well as controlling Android and iPhone, if you want to do it that way. They're going to split their line of products between consumer and enterprise. They say one of the mistakes we made is we didn't serve the business company customer. We tried to serve both because we saw that business customers liked iPhone. We thought maybe we could do the same thing. They say, no, we're going to super serve enterprise. We're going to make good business phones, and we're going to make consumer phones. You may have seen some headlines that RIM was abandoning the consumer market. Some people interpreted the analyst call comments to mean that they were getting out of consumer. They've hastened today to clarify we are not going to stop making consumer phones. We're just going to split those lines.
Aren't they going to shy away from the consumer market in the U.S., though, which is what is confusing to some people? They're more interested in the consumer markets in more emerging markets.
Yes,
with lower cost
I think
phones.
So. And like everything today.
Right.
It's complex, but they aren't getting out of that market everywhere. At one point during the call, Hines said that a sale of the company would be the absolute last resort, though later he hinted that the idea had crossed the board's collective mind. Any takers? Analysts are doubtful RIM could get much for a sale. And in fact, New York Times deal book points out both the Canadian and the United States governments would get involved in any kind of sale talk for RIM. Canada, because RIM is a Canadian company, they're proud of RIM. They want to keep RIM Canadian. The United States, because they rely on RIM for all of their government-level encryption devices. You know, the president of the United States has a RIM BlackBerry because that was the only one they felt was secure enough to use. So the United States isn't going to look kindly on a Chinese company, for instance, buying RIM. They're going to want to vet anybody that takes over that company.
Venezuelan RIM.
Hugo Chavez is going to wade in and buy RIM. So there you go.
Well, back to the whole mobile fusion product. There was a while ago, there was this listing, a job listing for an iOS developer for RIM, and people were like, oh, they're quitting and they're doing all these things. It's really a smart move to understand that, look, if you're losing out your marketplace, at least have the management tools for everybody else. So if they're using Android or they're using iOS, they still have a presence in that, because otherwise Microsoft's going to own that completely in the enterprise. As for their whole kind of focus, it's kind of splitting the idea of consumer and business, they kind of became a consumer product by accident. It's because their product was used so much at work that people were like, I'm just going to keep using this. And then they started kind of making them more and more friendly slightly. They changed the colors of things. And like people, I remember the first time BlackBerries were being used by regular people. It was this these colorful BlackBerry Pearls and things. But they were still really built for business. And to kind of shy away from that, I think it's a smart idea, because when they weren't caring, they were succeeding in the consumer business.
So I don't know if I buy that they started making them more consumer friendly entirely by accident. You're right that
I think it was a slow progression.
Business phones started to be used by consumers that RIM didn't mean to, but I think they saw that and they saw the iPhone and then they started to steer into that.
Right. I think it was the first thing, though, that it wasn't planned, but then they did respond to it. I'm hoping the best for these guys. I mean, they have a product out there. It's really secure. It's so secure to the point where governments are like, let us read what you have. They're like, we can't. We don't have the ability to show you that stuff. So, I mean, best of luck, Canadian RIM. That's not sarcastic.
I know, it just sounds so...
But I think these are good moves, by the way. And the other thing was when they cut all those guys like Jim Basile and the COO and the CTO, they dropped some high-level guys. So it shows that Hines is not afraid to go, look, we need a shift.
It does. It is heartening to have him say, listen, I've been in this job for 10 weeks, and finally it is clear. I need to do some pretty major, some
house
stuff.
Cleaning.
Yeah, some house cleaning. And yeah, it has to be dramatic, right? I mean, RIM has a long way to go. This is a very, very big year for them.
All right. Let's move on to another story. Actually, I was thinking earlier today about how Google tried to revolutionize the cell phone market and said, we're going to change the playing field. It's a broken market. We're going to come in. We're going to sell our own branded devices from manufacturers. We're going to change the way you buy cell phones. That didn't work out very well. Let's go on to our next story.
Yeah, well, Google believes that the current model for selling tablets is broken.
Totally different.
Right, exactly. What they're going to do, the Wall Street Journal is reporting this, is that Google is going to sell Android tablets from a variety of manufacturers, including Motorola when they end up owning them, from its own store, it's an online store. The Journal also reports that Google is going to sell co-branded tablets from Samsung and Asus, and that Google is considering subsidizing the cost of the tablets So you get some really nice, cheap Android devices. Of course, the model is broken, they're saying. The report's pretty sparse on details. There's no launch date in here. And yes, back in 2010, they did try to do the Google Nexus One with HTC. But the big difference here between tablets and phones, you don't necessarily have to get the carriers involved. I mean, the thing is, who buys a phone and just uses it as
tablets have plans, though.
I would imagine that maybe they will shy away from that, or they could have another storefront for that, or redirect.
Well, even the iPad market, which obviously is totally dominant, the majority of people who have iPads have Wi-Fi only iPads. So.
Yeah, it's an option. It's you know at least you have the ability to get the tablet that doesn't require a monthly fee that way, or you could do it with if it's really that important to you. I think it's smart.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this plays. But definitely, you can say two things for Google. They have some experience trying this sort of thing. You know, even if it didn't work out, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. You learn from your failures. And second, tablets, like we said, different beast, so to speak. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Corel. Corel is still here, folks. Corel Draw Suite is a fantastic, powerful program that you can use. Suite X6 just came out. It's got a lot of updates, a lot of cool things. You know, Corel bought PaintShop Pro. Leo was talking about that on Windows Weekly earlier today. So they know what they're doing with graphics. If you haven't checked out Corel Draw lately, which you may not have, you owe it to yourself to go look at it. You can get a great picture. It's what makes the difference in having a powerful, versatile, and easy-to-use set of tools you can trust. And that's what Corel Draw Graphics Suite X6 is all about. Vector illustration, page layout, photo editing. There's a whole web design built into the Corel Draw X6 that you don't have to know anything about HTML or CSS to make a beautiful web page. You just need to be able to draw it. I need somebody to draw it for me, but if you're good at it, this is going to help you out. Web graphics, logos, flyers, brochures, billboards. You can do car wraps. Obviously, you can do photo editing. CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6 includes everything for both experienced and aspiring designers in one affordable package. In fact, even idiots like me can make something that looks good. Stock photos, clip art images, fonts, templates, 2 hours of training videos. That's what I need. Fully 64-bit enabled, exclusive for Windows. Powerful new typography engine that supports OpenType, new document styles, and much more. But you don't have to take our word for it. Try it absolutely free. Get your free 30-day trial of Corel Draw Graphics Suite X6, plus an exclusive limited-time offer at corel.com/TNT. That's corel.com/TNT. If you do decide after the 30 days to keep it, use this promo code, TWITX6. TWIT for This Week in Tech, X6. For the Corel Draw X6 for an exclusive 10% off. Now, the offer varies by country, and you have until April 30th, so just about a month to go try it out. Do it now. Don't wait. Go to corel.com/TNT, and if you do decide to keep it, use that promo code TWITX6 for an exclusive 10% off. We thank Corel for their support of Tech News Today. On to a hacking story. I wish Darren was here for today, but we'll try to do it justed. Visa and MasterCard, according to KrebsOnSecurity.com, are warning banks that a breach at an unnamed card processor may involve more than 10 million card numbers. Now, Wall Street Journal separately reporting that breached processor was Global Payments, Inc. But the upshot is Visa and MasterCard started sending out non-public warnings last week about specific card numbers to their payment card issuers. Those are the banks that give you your card, like your Bank of America or your credit union, etc. The card associations stated that the breached credit card processor was compromised between January 21st and February 25th of this year. Law enforcement's on the case. I think Secret Service is involved in this. Investigators believe that this breach may be somehow connected to Dominican street gangs in and around New York City. They found that a lot of the numbers are being used frequently in parking garages in New York. And they have full track one and track two data off the cards, meaning that they have everything they need to clone counterfeit cards.
Now, Global Payments actually confirmed that this breach happened in March. There's an update to the story, so I'm just looking to that right now. So it is them.
Well, Krebs says January to February, but you're saying Global Payments is like, yeah, it was us. Well,
they discovered
a breach.
Right. And we discovered it in March. So yeah. The breach probably still happened between those dates we mentioned earlier. But they didn't discover it until March.
They were trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out what parking garages, how does that, it's so random. I mean, if cards are stolen and then you're using these stolen cards in order to pay for expensive days of parking?
Yeah, I mean, parking's expensive in New York City.
Yeah,
And you want to use something
true.
That's not going to flag
I guess
database,
so, right.
You know, so parking garage is probably pretty mundane.
one of the first things that gets like gets your credit card flagged is what, like gas stations when you like I was
in two different states.
Right, I was traveling a lot and I would see, oh yeah, you're in Vermont. How could you possibly be in New York the next day on a plane?
What's happened when Eileen has been in New York and I've been still here in California? We both, you know, she fills up a rental car, I fill up here, boom, card stops working.
So it could easily,
they're like, wait a minute.
What it could easily be done is like these cards are being sold to like, hey, do you want to get a cheap discount on this this particular car garage? Yeah, you can do that. If you just give me $15, I'll pay for it on my card. I'll pay for it on my card. Do that again and again and again. You're running some serious money there.
Yeah, that's true too. Anyway, it's one of the most massive breaches since the Heartland payment processor a few years ago. So, you know, they're talking about 10 million card numbers. Now, one report that I read suggested that it was probably business cards that were being breached more than personal cards, if that makes any difference to you. But still,
you could probably fly under the radar, I guess, a little bit longer without red flags from individuals.
With businesses, though, you're traveling anyway, so there's a good chance that's not going to get flagged as easy.
That's what I mean.
Possibly.
If it was me, I'd be like, what? No, I wasn't. This isn't me.
Yeah, but the business has so many transactions coming
right.
out of the same number.
That it might, you know, maybe. It might be found eventually, but especially the bigger the business, the more it's like, I don't know, maybe they were in the parking garage. Who knows?
Bad news for Yahoo. Kara Swisher at All Things D reports Yahoo is preparing to begin layoffs of what could be thousands of employees starting next week. This is according to multiple sources and is expected to also accompany a new structure for the organization. Swisher's sources said the plans aren't set in stone, but right now here's what's happened. Thompson, along with consultants he hired from Boston Consulting Group, met with the senior executives on Tuesday, presented the plan for reorganization, then followed that on Wednesday with a wider meeting of top managers. Cuts will be deep and mostly aimed at the product, research, and marketing units of Yahoo, according to Kara's report. They're trying to figure out what to do with their ad technology and their search organizations. So there's a possibility of trying to sell those pieces of the company. Because remember, they've outsourced most of that to Bing, to Microsoft. So they don't necessarily need all of the ad tech. They still need an advertising department, but they don't need all the tech and they don't need all the search anymore if they're going to stick with that. The new organization would be split along the lines of media and advertising with a small research group of around 50 people.
Kind of curious who would end up buying those pieces of Yahoo. I mean, Google can't, because if they do, it'll just bring up red flags with the DOJ. Mm-hmm. I think Microsoft probably get away with it because they're the number two, hardly.
But probably wouldn't want to if they're like, why would we buy the thing you replaced?
We already have all your technology. We power your technology. Why would you need it? But like, who would, I don't know who would want this search business at that point.
Ask.
Ask. No, I forget who number three is.
DuckDuckGo.
We'll actually, they're doing pretty well. But I still, these are harsh moves, and Yahoo needs to have a plan. And if they actually figure out what they're doing instead of their premier digital company or media company, it's kind of nice to see that they can figure out, okay, look, we got to get rid of this other stuff and focus on something. I mean, it worked for AOL. I mean, they were like a laughing stock for a while, and they're like, look, we're becoming a media content company, and they're doing well.
Then again, layoffs of thousands of employees, even if it's a good call for the company, that is a deep cut indeed.
Well, you got 14,000 employees, so put it in some context. It's not a 2,000 employee company laying off.
Well, no, I mean,
but
as far as the percentage of their company, no, it's not, you know, slicing it in
half. Over 5%.
But that's a lot of people who need jobs.
Absolutely. Finally, TechCrunch reporting that the first new project to emerge from the Wikimedia Foundation since 2006 is beginning development called Wikidata. It's a new effort to provide a database of knowledge that can be read and edited by humans and machines alike. So if you hear about the semantic web, this is what it's built on. It's built on structured data. And think of it this way. When you go into Wikipedia and you make an article and you say a fact, let's say Iaz was born in June, and then you go into another article, it's about Twit, and you're like, oh, I want to say that again. Well, you have to put it in there again. And then you go into another article about famous people who've once lived in Hudson-on-Croton, and then you have to put it in again. And over and over and over, you have to replicate that piece of data in every single article. Well, this would solve that. You'd basically say, this is the structured data about Iaz. This is his birth date. And anytime Iaz is referred, if you want to have his birth date, you just say you want his birth date, and it gets put there. It's kind of object-oriented. Obviously, people who work with semantic web are like, that's not exactly how it works. But an oversimplification sometimes helps people wrap their head about it. DBpedia tried this, but they were just trying to extract the data from Wikipedia. They weren't making it editable. This will be editable, and it will bring localized versions of Wikipedia on par with each other. Right now, about 4 or 5 languages dominate Wikipedia, and the rest are very shallow in their data. This would provide the factual data to all language versions of Wikipedia at once. Wikimedia Deutschland is leading the effort from Germany, obviously, and they hope to hand it over to the Wikimedia Foundation by March 2013. Here's the timeline. By August, they want to have one common source of structured data for all the Wikipedia versions. By December, allow editors to add and use the data. And then phase three after that would be automatic creation of lists and charts based on the data. So when you see those stripes on the side of Wikipedia that give you, you know, kind of the vital statistics, the main information, those would all be powered out of this database, so they wouldn't have to be replicated in more than one situation. Here's where it gets really interesting. It's being funded by the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence. That's Paul Allen's institute that he founded. They're given 1.3 million euros. Another quarter of the funding comes from the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, Gordon Moore, founder of Moore's Law, through its science program. And then another 25% comes from Google. And this is where I think it gets intriguing, because we heard all those weird rumors about, well, Google's going to start doing semantic search. And everybody's like, but they've been doing semantic search. And Danny Sullivan had a good article up on Search Engine Land. This could be the source of those rumors if Google was going to build a query engine on top of this database. This database will be Creative Commons. Anybody can use it to build anything on top of it. And so if you want to say, like, how many women were mayors of towns in North Dakota between 1955 and 1972, this is the kind of database that could instantly answer that. So the kind of Wolfram Alpha kind of questions.
So since you wouldn't have to be working with Wolfram Alpha or worried about their servers, and if this is open enough,
you don't have to buy it from them.
You don't have to buy it. You don't have to pay for the APIs or any or API access. That means Google or anybody can come up with like an open source version of Siri, because that's what Wolfram Alpha powers a lot of things for Siri. So Google's been working on that anyway. Android phones could have that built in. Who knows what other devices could have this kind of, I guess, presented data. Instead of just looking up random horrible results that are like Yahoo Answers, which is always confusing. Like, how is that even interesting? That's not even correct.
Half the time you click on it and then you can't even find the answer.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's just such a mess. What is that?
Cut that division too, Yahoo.
And you know, you can argue about Wikipedia's accuracy, and it is inaccurate sometimes, but it's actually accurate more often than it's inaccurate. In fact, most studies have found out it's about as accurate as most vetted sources of information. This makes it easier to vet, because you're only having to find it in one place. I don't know how many times when I've been researching Tech History Today, I find conflicting versions in Wikipedia of the same fact. And so instead of having to run down all of those versions and correct them all and figure out which one's right, you only have to figure out white once, put it in the database, and then you're done. I think this is fascinating stuff. Structured data, I'm telling you, semantic web, this is just going to keep getting bigger and bigger over the next decade. Let's move on to the news views. Minecraft news views.
Wow.
Whoa. Yes. Patrick Delahunty.
Nice.
Very good work.
Thank you, Patrick Delahunty. And if you're on the audio podcast, it's worth checking out the news views on today's video podcast. Good news, if you didn't like yesterday's news views, we're not going to do that joke again.
Boo.
The European Telecommunications Standards Institute is currently weighing competing standards for the nano SIM card. We've talked about that. But it won't make its decision this week. According to Les Echos, a French publication, the delay is actually due to the disagreements among all the parties, Nokia and Apple. The vote will be delayed by at least 30 days, according to ETSI rules, ETSI rules. Thanks, Les.
Les Echos.
Les Echos. I think he's French.
Netflix has gone shopping. Netflix just purchased DVD.com for an undisclosed amount of money. Domain name Wire noticed that DVD.com was redirecting to DVD.netflix.com. And Netflix later confirmed the purchase, saying Netflix cares about keeping DVD healthy. And this is just one small investment in keeping DVD healthy.
I'm sure people are freaking out. Like, Quixer's coming back. It's like, no, they have a different website for that. Verizon CEO Lowell McAdams said that Verizon could offer a wireless video service by the end of 2012 if their deal with Spectrum Co. is allowed to continue. Spectrum Co. is that joint venture of cable companies and is selling its spectrum to Verizon. Even more intriguing is that McAdams said that some content providers told Verizon they are willing to, quote, do an a la carte approach. So wireless a la carte cable channels.
Oh, let's see if the channels agree with that. But that would be awesome. Wasteland 2 may get more help than those who just backed it with millions on Kickstarter. If the project raises $2.1 million before the Kickstarter deadline hits in 17 days, and believe it, these guys were psyched when they passed a million. They're at $1.7 million. If they can get it to $2.1 million, Obsidian Entertainment will help develop the game. Currently, Wasteland 2, like I said, 1.7 million. Obsidian is behind games like Fallout New Vegas, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2. So I don't think they'd be turning down that help if they get the money.
Looks like somebody put a quarter in the machine because a new challenger has appeared. Was that a quarter?
I think so.
Or token.
Huh? Sure. In there, the search engine market, that is. In fact, we were just talking about them a minute ago. DuckDuckGo has experienced a huge uptick in its direct queries per day starting in January of this year. Daily traffic is up 227% in 3 months. If you've never heard of DuckDuckGo, it's the search engine that says it'll never track you and doesn't store any personal information like your IP address and has a pretty cool name.
According to a Glassdoor.com survey, Tim Cook is a smash hit with Apple employees with a whopping 97% approval rating.
Cook.
Of course, this brings comparison to Steve Jobs. How was he doing? Jobs' approval rating fluctuated between 95 and 97%. So, yeah.
Unpopular president.
This makes him a giant company. Also, Apple is the top brand in Japan for the first time, according to a new Nikkei brand survey. Google was number two, and Sony and Nintendo didn't even break the top 10 for the first time in a long time.
That's kind of hard. Yes, PainX, this is live. Trend Micro has connected an alias that was used to hack computers in India, Japan, and those belonging to Tibetan activists to Gu Kayan, a former grad student in Sichuan University. Gu may have recruited students at the school to work on research related to defense and computer attacks. The university receives money from the government, but the attacks are not directly linked to the Chinese government. However, some researchers believe the targets of the attack strongly suggest state intervention.
PocketNow.com got its hands on a leaked LG Optimus Elite renders. The Android device is coming at Sprint and Virgin Mobile, and it's got some low-end specs with a 3.2-inch screen, an 800 megahertz processor, running Gingerbread, but the Elite will also have a 5-megapixel camera and NFC. The device could cost around $100 off contract.
Neil Roseman, Zynga's VP of Engineering, recently oversaw the launch of Zynga's Project Z, which enables games to be played directly on Zynga.com. Then he quit. All Things D confirmed that Roseman left Zynga shortly after the announcement 3 weeks ago after spending just 15 months with the company. Roseman told All Things D that he was commuting from Seattle to San Francisco 3 to 4 times a week and was looking forward to spending more time with his family.
But he doesn't have a... Yeah, he has a family.
He must have a family.
That's a good excuse.
Well, maybe he just like adopted a family.
Are you all ready for the randomizer?
Showing up.
Randomizer. I think it's too late.
Here it is.
We're here.
We have a special guest on the randomizer today. Mad's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo. Welcome to Tech News Today.
Hey, how you doing?
It's good. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us today. You got something exciting to tell us about, I hear.
I absolutely do. According to John Ficarra, the reason behind coming up with a Mad app off first was to save the ailing iPad.
Because the new iPad, it was only selling in the billions, I hear.
Well, one of the biggest problems with the iPad, and I have one, is that the App Store is just severely lacking in choice.
Mm-hmm. This is an altruistic move. I love it.
Yeah. So yeah, what's the app about, Dick?
Okay, so it's the first time you can get a digital subscription to Mad Magazine, and it seemed apropos to let it launch on April 1st, Alfred E. Newman's birthday. It's going to be pretty nifty. Now, you know, if you're familiar with Mad, you know one of the most beloved features is the Mad Fold-In. Well, in the digital version, you'll be able to run your mouse just right to left and fold it in electronically. Now, you could still fold it in manually, but each time you do it, you do have to buy another monitor.
Right.
So we do recommend using the mouse as the best option.
Now, can you rip pages out, too, and put them up on your wall?
The same thing. You have to buy a new monitor.
Okay.
unless you'd like to print it. And some other neat features. Another feature that is in Mad are the Mad Marginals, those tiny little drawings that are between panels. You'll be able to zoom in on those so you can see exactly what's going on in the little marginals. If you already have a print subscription, you get the digital subscription for free.
Oh, that's smart. I'm glad you guys are doing it that way.
And the pricing's good. If you want a single digital issue, it's going to be $4.99. If you want a year subscription, it's $9.99. You're going to be able to buy
issues. That's great.
Yes, exactly. And two issues, and you save some money. It starts with the issue that's out now, and that you have it on the screen now. And from that issue onward, they're all optimized for the new iPad screen. And they're solely going to be putting up old issues, but the old issues won't have the high resolution that the ones that they are starting to put up right now will have. And it starts on Sunday.
And U.S. only, or is it going to roll out to other countries?
You know what, since it's, you know, I didn't ask that question, but I'm sure since it, you know, you just download it, it's probably everywhere in the world.
I hope so. That
would want it.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Right. I don't think we're doing any free translations.
Right. It's just going to be in the one language.
And, you know, for now, it's iPad only. I did tell them, I said, if there's not an Android version by Monday, I'm history. You could not believe how fast they packed up my office into boxes. And I was out of that office by 3 p.m.
It's not that hard to make an Android app, but, you know. When you're
looking. You know, they'll see how this goes and probably expand it in the future.
Well, our chat room has gone crazy. Everyone is really super into this, as you've explained it over the last couple of minutes, Dick. So
yeah, they all were like,
excited too.
Wait, is this a joke?
Yeah, they kind of don't trust the release date, I think.
Yeah, no, it's very funny because John Figueroa one day said, wouldn't it be strange if on April 1st we went to the App Store and found out that the studio is 1K Studios, that 1K Studios was pulling our chain also and hadn't made an app?
Yeah, all those mock-ups, those weren't real.
It's April Fool's. That was it. Got you.
Joke's on you. No, that's great. I can't wait to download it and take a look. iOS App Store. You just look for just look for Mad Magazine?
Mad Magazine, yeah. Exactly.
And would it be in the newsstand then, I guess?
Oh, yes. Yeah, right. Mad will still continue to publish the print edition. The digital edition, as I said, if you have the print edition, you get the digital edition free. And there are some more. There's going to be some more interactive an extra fold in and things that will be in the digital edition. And there's also some free stuff there. So on Sunday, if you want to go and get the app, the app is free. You'll get some bonus stuff to play without paying a penny of your hard-earned money. How cheap is that?
That is super cheap. That's cheap enough even for me. Mad Digital going to share a birthday with Gmail. Did you
know that? Is Gmail's birthday on the 1st?
April 1st, yeah.
Well, we were first.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Dick, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, you can find Dick tomorrow, Saturdays, on
the Weekly Daily Gizmos, right here on this very channel at 5 o'clock. And I'll be with Leo on the Tech Guy show at 4:45 Eastern Time.
All right, we'll see you then.
I'll be here, and I'll be there.
All right.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Dick.
Thanks, Dick.
Bye.
All right. Let's check the calendar, Sarah.
Well, now you want to know what's coming up. All right, I'll tell you.
What's coming up April 1st?
Sunday, April 1st. It's the deadline to enter the 2012 Google Science Fair. This is actually an online science competition. And anybody in the entire world can participate as long as they're between the ages of 13 and 18. So it's not us, but maybe it's you. You can go to google.com/events/sciencefair to find out more.
I'm 17.
Really?
I'm not.
You look very old. Sony's new ice cream sandwich update. For 17, he looks old. Sony's new ice cream sandwich update timeline. We've got an update. The rollout begins mid-April. All right. That's great. Except for it's only for a few Xperia models. The Arc S, the Xperia Neo V, and the Xperia Ray. Other Sony models will also get the update, but not until at least mid-May. Chrome version 18 has rolled out to the stable channel. Comes with a few things, including hardware accelerated rendering for the HTML5 canvas element on both Windows and Mac OS X. And finally, Mortal Kombat is coming to the PlayStation Vita on May 1st.
Very cool. All right, let's finish up with some incoming messages.
Incoming message.
That's what I said. First one is a video voicemail, our second in a row. This is fantastic. Clarifying some facts about Baidu.
Hey,
AT&T crew.
There we go.
This is Daniel from Malaysia. Just to clarify about Sarah's comment on the social network in China, Baidu is a search engine, and the current two hottest social network that people are using are Twitter-like clones, which are Weibo, which is means short message. There is two. There's the Sina Weibo and QQ's Weibo, which both are actually claiming to be number one. If they are actually number one or number two. Thanks.
He is correct. I confused Weibo with Baidu.
All right.
Two networks that are popular in China, but I used the wrong one in the conversation.
I love that we're getting video voicemail now from Malaysia.
Yeah.
And people who are like, oh, yeah, I live there, you know.
Right.
I can understand why that's confusing. Here's the deal.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. More videos.
Woo. Woo. All right. This is the last time we're going to do this, Simon and Alan. We'll just give you guys your email addresses. You can take this offline. But our week-long HTML5 debate continues. One, Simon says, look, excuse my selfishness. I intended to give Alan the last word in the HTML5 debate, but the discussion raised some very salient questions, and I just couldn't miss the possibility of perhaps putting them to a group of regular users like the TNT audience and chat room. So here's his pitch to you. UI geeks, and user interface geeks, sometimes refer to the look and feel of a user interface. As we all know, the web destroyed notions of a standardized look, so modern toolkits like Android, Zool, and JavaFX are highly stylable, just like HTML. But what about feel? If web apps are to rely on rival UI toolkits instead of a standard, things like touch gestures may vary across apps, reflecting the nuances of each underlying toolkit. The $64,000 question is, do you guys actually care? iOS developers can style their UI, but familiar controls, physical and screen, must behave largely as expected. Yet some say this is too limiting. So where should the future lie? Talk of standards and toolkits may bore people, but I implore end users not to let computer scientists build the future for you. Let us know what matters so the tools and standards of today will give you the apps you want tomorrow. And then he says, okay, I'm going to shut up now. But I think this is a great way to finish off this thread, which is, okay, the designers have their theories, they have their philosophies. What do you care about as an actual user?
Ayaz, what do you care about?
Sarah's like,
I'm going to care about getting these guys' email addresses to each other.
Right.
And, seriously, this is a question because these guys, they agonize over this stuff. Do you care if your apps work the same way or if they're a little different from app to app? Does that annoy you, or you're like, no, it's a different app.
It's not so much that I'm like, I need everything to work exactly the same way. I don't even think it's conscious half the time, but there are certain behaviors that you get used to using. And the thing is that if behavior works well, other apps will just adopt it because they realize it's the right thing to do. That's how a lot of apps have grown over time. They all have behaviors built in that they wouldn't necessarily have had at the beginning. But if apps don't work well, and I'm going between apps, I can figure it out. It's not so much that I'm really annoyed that there's a different chain of command to perform, you know, a send to email type of a thing. But it's just better if they work the same way.
Yeah, one of the things about like Android apps is that the UI guidelines were mandatory versus like Apple's, which is very, very stringent. Like, look, you're going to do it this way. That way, when people come to our app store, they understand this is the way you do things. Mm-hmm. And that caused a lot of frustration for people with Android to the point they're going, like, these apps don't work right. To the point where Google said, look, these are our guidelines and we highly suggest you follow them. You don't have to. But we highly suggest it. So that whole UI thing on the apps area, like, it seems like standardization is really helpful. On the web, what seems to happen is more like an evolution kind of theory. The strongest one wins out. Like Amazon's tabbed interface, like I saw that copied over and over and over again. Considering how vast the catalog was, this is the thing that made the most sense. And that kind of won out. So standards are not like, it seems like whatever reaches the most people, whatever's easiest seems to win out.
All right, so I wish I had a great place to send you to carry on this discussion. Simon didn't give us like an outlet or a place to carry on. So maybe listen in Monday. We'll figure that out. Or just, go on to your local message board.
Yeah, like a forum?
Leoville.com. I don't know. Let's move on to our next message.
Kildy, I believe is how you pronounce your name, says, why not open source a competition to redesign the r/TechNewsToday subreddit via CSS. User interaction, you know, it makes sense. It could go alongside the Twit Network theme or whatever, but you have to admit, it's pretty tame compared to the Xbox 360 subreddit, let's say, or the Apple subreddit, for instance. I'm just a spam cop code. I'm just a spam cop code makes my head warm up. I don't really understand that last part.
Yeah.
I'm just a spam cop code makes my head warm up.
Got it.
So he's not going to be doing the
spam
redesign.
Cop code, not a real thing. Not a real thing.
That definitely sounds like a movie. Spam cop code.
Did you get the spam cop code?
Yes. Coming to the theater near you. Tom Hanks has it. So our subreddit was created by others. Not the others from Lost, but just people who are fans of the show. So TD Enterprises, Jacob Miller, and Kilde, who wrote this email, are the moderators. They're the folks who make it. I say, if somebody wants to step forward and say, hey, I'll help, let us know. I'm also one of the moderators of the subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. And we would love to reskin the site. We here don't have the bandwidth to prioritize something like this right now, because we're trying, you know, if you've used our website, you know, we've had some issues here and there, and we're prioritizing that. We're trying to get that all working smoothly. Not that we wouldn't want to get to this eventually, but if somebody wants to step forward and say, hey, I'll make this look all fancy, we will gladly accept your help. So let one of us know, one of the moderators know, at TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Great place to also vote on stories for the show. We thank everybody who gets in there. And you know what? We don't thank the moderators enough. Thanks to Kildy, Jacob Miller, and TD Enterprises for making that run smoothly. I am listed as a moderator. I do absolutely nothing in there. And I don't have to, because these guys are awesome. So appreciate their efforts in there as well. Just a real quick note. Some folks in the chat room are pointing out that TweetDeck has been taken offline. TechCrunch reporting there's a bug that has given some TweetDeck users access to others' accounts. So it's got some people all at Twitter out there. Probably by the time you hear this, it's all been taken care of. But people in the chat room are really excited about it. So we thought we'd pass it along. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. That's it for this week of Tech News Today. You can get This Week in Tech on Sunday with Leo Laporte. Subscribe to that at twit.tv. And you can always find our episodes and subscribe to our episodes on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy April Fool's Day.